We're good.
You ready?
Yep.
All right, we're ready. Are you ready? Okay. Well, my name is Jeff Bertoft, and I'm a Principal Program Manager of Web Apps at Microsoft.
And I'm Kirill Saksonov. I'm a Program Manager on the Web Platform team.
So first of all, thank you all for coming to this session today. How many web developers do we have in the house call themselves web developers? Excellent.
Awesome.
That's what we were hoping for. So we're going to try to keep this casual. I'm a Texan. I live in Texas. So by nature, I'm casual. In fact, you're quite lucky that I'm contractually obligated to wear pants to these sessions. Otherwise, you don't know what kind of show you would be getting today. We want to keep it fun. We're going to show you lots of demos. We want to show you lots of code. And we think that it might generate a lot of questions. But we're going to ask you to kind of hold your questions to the end. We'll do a Q&A session at the end. And if we don't get to questions that come up during the presentation, we will stick around and answer them afterwards. So with that, Kirill, why don't we get started?
Awesome. So web apps have been a journey. We introduced hosted web apps last year. And I'll go over that a little bit. But if you're a web developer, you're used to having your HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and other resources up on the server. They live in the server. And you're used to them being hosted inside a browser. So they get pulled down in the browser, and that's how users interact with them. Well, with hosted web apps, what we did is we allow the app host to navigate to a remote URL. So it's the same model you're used to. The app host can navigate to a remote URL. You can still navigate to local content, but you've got that option. And the cool thing in the app host is that you get access to the entire set of Universal Windows APIs. So any API that a Universal Windows platform app can call, you can do that as well directly through JavaScript. You just feature detect, and then go ahead and reference the Windows namespace, windows.ui, .notifications, for example, or if you want to get some hardware access, you can do that. The entire set of Windows APIs is just there in the DOM, all while following your standard web development model that you're used to. And you can publish to the Windows Store. You gain discoverability. Users can pin your app to the Start menu. They can find it in Cortana. They can find it in Store Search. And you can light up Windows features. So the way we enabled this is we took the Edge, Microsoft Edge HTML rendering engine and the Chakra JavaScript engine that power the Microsoft Edge browser, and we put them behind the app host. So they power your web content inside the app host. They load, render it, and all. So we just ripped those two out, put them behind the app host, and now you can have package content, which is what you've been used to in the past on Windows. You can navigate to local HTML, CSS, JavaScript files, and other resources like images and so forth. And you also have hosted content, where you're navigating to a remote URL. Now, the other thing is you're not limited to either type of content. You can mix and match. You can navigate between remote and local content. In your remote content, you can reference local content that's in the package. So it's very flexible and lets you choose how you want to build your app.
So we realize that being web developers, you're trying to target as many platforms as you can. That is the value out of the web. You write your application once, and then it can be viewed by any user on any platform as long as they have a browser. So we first want to step back and talk about the cross-platform nature of the web and how that works in the application space. We know as a developer, you're used to writing for multiple different runtimes. We know how to do feature detection. It's something that we've been doing in the web world for years. We know how to write different CSS properties for different browsers and things of that sort. So we're already targeting Edge and Chrome and Firefox and Safari and possibly other engines all at the same time. And we also want to be able to do that from whatever platform we're using. So the web is not something that is only built on Windows. We would love it if it was. We would love to see every web developer in the world running on Windows machines, and maybe someday we'll get there. But we know that some of you are using Macs, some of you are running on Linux, And we want to make sure that you can continue to use the platform that you use today and to the platform that you use to write your web applications to be able to write web apps for stores as well. Now, we also want to make sure that you can reach as many different devices as you can. So Microsoft, we don't just enable you to write applications for Windows. We also support tools that help you do that cross-platform. And we kind of divide that into two different sections. The first one is, missed this slide here, okay. So step back, why do you want to write web apps as store apps as opposed to just do it in the browser? Well, there's a number of drivers that might be pushing you in that direction. First of all, moving to an application, to a store app, helps you reach users. There are going to be some demographic of users who are going to look for your store, your app in the store first before they go to a web search to find it. And we want to enable you to be there in the store when they do that search. We also know that there's many hardware APIs that are available on devices today that aren't available through the browser. So if you want to use Bluetooth in your application, well, we can enable you to do that as a store application when we can't yet do that in the browser. Monetization is another thing that's really tough on the web today. We've done a lot with ads, but when it comes to moving outside of ad networks and actually charging for our applications, it's quite difficult to do still. So stores enable monetization models for us to be able to charge for our applications or to be able to sell things within our applications and make it very easy for users to interface with us monetarily, basically pay us money for things. And last but not least, sometimes web code isn't the best code to write your application in. There may be portions of your app that should be ran as native, or you may want to run inside of a native package so that it's not exposed like JavaScript is. We're going to show you samples of all of these today, but these are some of the drivers that might move you into that space. So building cross-platform applications, we do support the tools, and Microsoft is dedicated to making these tools available to help you do that. And specifically talk about two tools that Microsoft works with. First of all, Cordova is a popular tool for building packaged applications. So a packaged application, as Kirill mentioned, is where you take the JavaScript, CSS, and HTML and put it inside of the package, ship it up to the store, and then the user downloads that application and you make service calls to get additional data. The hosted web app is where all of that content lives on your server. So for that, we have a community-supported tool that Microsoft invests in that's called Manifold.js, and we're both contributors to that. And what that allows you to do is take this hosted web app concept, what we started calling Project Westminster, and moving that across platform. So being able to write that same type of application for iOS and Android as well, and even Chrome and Firefox and other platforms. In fact, in the keynote today, they mentioned Manifold.js as a tool that helps you write Office add-ins as well. Office add-ins are just hosted web apps. In fact, they work very similarly to the way that our Windows apps do. So can you move me over to 8? I'm gonna do a little demo for you. So this is one of our partners called WannaPlan, and they actually use WebGL 7. Say you're 8. 7. There we go. WannaPlan is a partner that uses WebGL to help you design floor plans and layouts, and it's a pretty cool application. I have a page set up here already that shows you what it is, and you can add Sierra. Garden boundaries here, you can add all this stuff to it. What we want to do is turn this into a store application. So I'm actually going to then run, Manifold.js here in the command line. I realize my color choice might not have been the best for this screen, but hopefully you can see it. So Manifold.js is primarily a command line tool. It's a Node.js tool, so you install Node.js, then you do an npm for Manifold.js, And it'll install the pieces. It also has a website component where you can actually just go and enter your information into a form on the website, and it runs this in the background. So I'm actually going to start with the URL here, and then come on, you can do it. Wait, Zoom, it does not want to let me type today. So let's do it this way. And I'm going to paste in the URL. And then for fun, I'm going to just turn on the debug so that you can see what's happening. And when we run this, it's actually going to generate those applications for us right here locally. And it'll generate packages for iOS and for Android and for Windows 10. It'll also do a one for the web as well. And what Manifold.js does is it takes the W3C manifest, which is a standard, and allows you to just write to the standard manifest, and then it converts that to the manifest for each platform. So you as a developer maintain the one manifest, and then we take care of generating everything else. So open this up here, and you'll see I have my application here. I'm going to go ahead and do run Manifold.js run Windows 10. Oops. Have to get into the.
Have to go into the directory first.
Yep. And it's going to install the Windows 10 application. And while it's doing that, I'm going to go ahead and show you the Android version of the app running. Now, this is using that same code base everywhere. So I'm running that same code base here. Oh, is that flipping it? That's an amazing camera. It's flipping it upside down somehow. So you'll see the same application here. Let me show it on Windows. But I want to show you that it does run on iOS and Android as well. And the experience is going to be the same. So here is that same experience. It'll pick up where I left off in the browser. It's a store application. I can go into and use the same 3D modes that I have in the browser because it's WebGL. WebGL running inside of the applications gives you that same 3D experience. And this is a store app. So now if you want to use those monetization models and sell components inside of your app, if you want to use some of those native APIs and run things like notifications, you can do that inside of the application. And it's still cross-platform. Because we know that as a web developer, you're trying to reach those users. So we want to help you do that. Now, as you get into the platforms, each of the platforms, you can start to write deeper code and start to utilize those APIs and write code that accesses those APIs. We're going to show you here how you do that. We're going to get a little bit deeper on the Windows platform. So let me pass it back to Crow here.
Right. So Jeff showed all of this running cross-platform, and many of you may have chosen the web for a specific reason because it is cross-platform, right? It's built on top of standards, and if you code to those standards, you're promised to run across all browsers that support them. But if you want to target Windows, you might want to deeply integrate with the platform. So the neat thing about Windows, and if you take your app and publish it to the store, it becomes a universal Windows app. So it can run across all of the Windows devices. It can run on Xbox, PC, phone, even a small little IoT device, and I'll show that later in the talk. And it can even run on HoloLens. So once you're running on those devices, you may want to interact with them because the way you interact with a HoloLens and the way you interact with an Xbox is different than the way you interact with a PC. There's no keyboard, there's no mouse. The input modality is different. So you need to account for that and then tailor your app in a way that it can handle that interaction model. So without talking about that any further, I'll jump to an app that I picked. And this is just the Meteor tutorial. It's a to-dos app I picked it because it's a responsive website. It looks great on a big screen. It looks great on a phone device. And it's also got live syncing. So Meteor uses MongoDB, and they do data binding all the way from the front end to the back end. So when I add a to-do on any client, it'll get added to my app.
Now, a lot of the patterns that you use today for web development translate over very well for multi-device development on Windows. Because you're doing things like feature detection. Well, that's something that you do on devices. I want to know if there's a dialer on the phone, so I feature detect for it. I want to know if there's a GPIO pin, so I'll feature detect that. And then also, you know, your responsive design to match all of the different sizes of screens and window types that you have on different devices, make it a well-suited pattern for bringing to multi-device.
Right, and you're already detecting those for those things if you're developing for the web. As Jeff said, there's APIs to detect what Windows device you're running on, so you can feature detect and then choose the feature set that you want to target without breaking your app in any of the hosts that it's running in. So what I did here is just pick the URL of my app, I added it as a start page, and then added it in the content URIs. Those are the two things you have to do to create a hosted web app on Windows, and this is just a hosted web app template. The other thing it includes by default is standard MS App error pages, and if there's any type of navigation error, so if I turned off the network, it would just navigate to those local pages, and then you get to own that experience and choose what the offline experience would be. But if I hit run here, it'll launch the application, and there it is. It's the tutorial application that's running on my desktop right now. People can access it on the browser. So Jeff, why don't you add a to-do for me?
Okay, from my browser.
And like I said, they're syncing across clients. So Jeff's going to add a to-do for me. There it is. And what the nice thing is, when I'm running inside the app host, I can integrate with the platform. And in this case, I've chosen rich notifications. So that went away, but I can go back to the Action Center and the notifications there. Oh, I look nervous. Oh, man, I'm sweating now. You want to do another one?
No, let's just stop there.
Well,
do you need another one?
Yeah, I do.
Boy, okay.
There it is. Okay, I just wanted to show you the notification because,
See, now you do look nervous.
Now I'm really nervous. Anyways, let's try a different list. So if I add it here, it is not adding. Anyways, what you should have seen is when the notification popped, it was a rich notification. I could have got it. And what that would have done is checked off the to-do. But this same app is currently running on the Xbox. So we talk about cross-device a lot, but we've never shown apps run across devices in a demo. So today we want to take that concept and actually show it. We showed you an app running on a phone. We showed you an app running on PC. But if we switch over to the Xbox, I can go to that exact same app, the Windows To Do app, and you can see it live updated. And I'm actually getting the notification on Xbox now as well when I launch the app. So thank you, Jeff. I'm looking good. And I've got all of those to-dos because it's live synced. Matter of fact, if I go back to my desktop client here, I can add another to-do. There's another notification, but I can add a note for myself, and that'll show up. So that's it. That's a cross-device app, a cross-platform web app that runs cross-device on Windows, the same app that you can deploy to Xbox, to phone, and to PC.
So in this example, Kuro didn't have to change any of his code on the server. It was a web app, which he then added some code to handle the Windows APIs. And for that, he did feature detection. I think you have a sample of that to show.
I do. I'm going
to
show that now. If I switch back to my desktop, so for the notifications that were not working, let me try it one more time. Just in case. Nope, it's got to be something with my notification center. Airplane mode. Okay. Anyways, for enabling rich notifications on Windows, you saw it pop up once. There was two buttons in the notification. So I know you can do web notifications through the browser, and that's awesome. You can pop a notification, you can do push notifications. But if you wanted to integrate with the platform, you can append to the notification. So here's the code. It's just in JavaScript. I'll make it a little bigger. So you can see I'm creating a toast notification, and then I'm adding a couple buttons to it. One of it says got it, and if I hit that button, it will cross out the to-do. And the other one says no. It means I don't have the to-do. In order to handle for those notifications, when my app gets activated, I have to listen for the activated event. You can notice that I'm doing feature detection for the Windows namespace. If it's there in the DOM, I go ahead and write all this Windows code to integrate with the platform, handle that it's a toast notification, and then check if I got it. If I do, I can go ahead, update my live template, and then check it off. And you'll notice that I have other checks in here. So I check for the voice command activation. I also support Cortana. And with Cortana, I can get the speech recognition back directly in JavaScript and then decide what to do with it inside my app. So one big announcement that came out yesterday was UWP's coming to Xbox. Now you can take your app and publish it to a store that will be on Xbox, and then users on Xbox will be able to discover it and interact with it. There's a couple key points to note. I mentioned this and touched on it a little bit earlier, but the interaction model is a little different. So when you're on Xbox, your users don't generally have a mouse and a keyboard. They have a gamepad controller. So what we did there, the default mode that you'll get is a mouse pointer controlled by the left thumbstick on the gamepad, and your users will be able to interact with your website that way. But we also added an open source JavaScript library. The link is there. It's on GitHub. You can pull that down. It's around 5 kilobytes or something like that. And if you add it to your site, you can enable HTML elements to be controller-enabled, basically controller-focusable. So a user can use the controller to interact with your page. And then the last thing you have to consider is just general design guidances, right? You're designing for a large screen. The users are probably going to be around 10 feet away or so. You don't want to put stuff in the edges because that bleeds through. Some TVs crop that. So you want the critical content more in the center and away from the edges. And a partner that we have been working with has been Nickelodeon. They have a website. It's a great website. It's interactive. And they discovered that it looks great on the TV as well. So they thought, why not try our website out and see what it would look like as an Xbox app? Now, this is still in development, so it's not the final product. We're not showing an app that's going to be in the store yet. But they're on their way. They've taken the JavaScript library that I talked about, and they've gamepad-enabled their website. So I'll switch over to the Xbox and show that running. Now I created this app just like I did with the to-do app. I added the start URL and then I added a content URI. I'm pointing to Nick's servers. And if I start moving the controller, you can see the elements on the screen start to focus, move around. The app looks great on a large screen, and I can hit a button and interact with it. When I hit the A button, I get a click, and I get a cool notification on the screen.
So if you flip me over to 7 there, input. Now, they built this application targeting the Xbox, but this is a UWP. So when you build it for one platform, it actually runs on all those platforms. So the interface is also quite suitable for a PC. So this is that same application running here on the PC. Now, I don't have an Xbox remote. I wanted to steal Kirill's, but they seem to have low-jacked it to the Xbox itself. I think that might say something about the trustworthiness of your presenters. But it works with the Xbox and the PC, but then it also falls down to your XY controls. So I'm using my arrow up left and right buttons to be able to navigate through this application. And there was no additional code. This was the same code that was written for the Xbox to enable that great experience there. And it just falls back to the PC and works for that experience as well.
Right, so it's that same directional navigation JavaScript library that we have a link to in our slides. It runs great both on the Xbox and then through the arrow keys on a PC.
And that's kind of the synergy that you get when you start building across all of these devices. So your cross-platform code starts to take shape on all the different Windows devices and lighting up just by adding Windows APIs to them. Okay, so it's great to build applications, and we want you all to build applications, but we also want you to publish them to the store as well. We want to make sure that other people than just yourself can enjoy them. So building web applications is very easy. We do have a number of different avenues for you to be able to publish them to the store. Again, we realize that you may not be on a PC when you're doing your development. So we want to make sure that we have tools that enable you to package that application for the store on any platform. So the first thing that we've done is with Manifold.js, it actually enables packaging from that tool as well. So if you're running that command line tool, you can just type in Manifold.js package Windows 10, and it'll give you an appex that you can then upload to the store. It actually does it for iOS and for Android as well on those platforms, so it helps you packaging across the way. But you can be on a Mac and build an appex for a Windows 10 store all through that command line tool. You can publish using Visual Studio, of course. The tools are well integrated into Visual Studio so that when you're ready, you can just go to the store menu and create an appex for the store, and then go to the Dev Center and upload there. But we want to talk about a new way that we're enabling you to be able to upload your packages. And it goes back to the, manifest? To the W3C manifest. Okay, so we talked about how this is the key to building those cross-platform applications. Well, soon you will be able to upload your W3C manifest to the store, the Windows Dev Center, directly. And I'm going to show you a quick little demo of how you do this. But we want you to be able to just maintain that simple manifest. Instead of having to worry about the appex, you'll just upload that manifest directly. So what I'm going to do is, first of all, I'm going to open up the Dev Center, where I've already started Jeff's fantastic test app. Oh, thank you. And so at this point, what I need to do is upload a package. So I'm going to go to the package here. And what it'll tell me is that I can upload an XAP, a Zap, an Apex bundle, an Apex upload, or a .web file. So this is something new that we've never done before. And it's actually really easy to make that. I'm going to start with the Bank of Contoso sample here. This is the app that they showed in the keynote yesterday when they did the bash demo. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to take my manifest, which you'll see right here. I'll open it quickly. This has the start URL, the name, references to my images, the scope that I want in my app, which will be translated directly to those URL rules that we have in Windows. And then I'm also going to take my images, and I'm going to zip them up. And then I'm just going to change this name to windowsapp.web, and it can be any name.web. So I'm changing that zip file to a .web file, and then I'm uploading it to the store.
And the change of .web is just to notify the store that you are uploading one of these packages. We didn't want to use just .zip because that's generic. You could be uploading any files. But when you change the extension type to .web, you're signifying that you're uploading a web app manifest. And when you do that, the store will accept your submission.
Right. I think I clicked my button a little too early. But so it's quite easy for you. So it doesn't take any tools at all to do that. You can upload that directly to the store from any platform. Okay. Can you switch me back to the slides? So we've showed you how easy it is to build web applications, but we also want to take some time and demonstrate how partners are using hosted web apps to build high-quality web applications. Many applications that you would not realize are a web app. They're often mistaken for native applications, and we're going to show some of those off to you and then kind of dig into some of the features that they utilize that really help them take on new life and new character when they're a Windows app. Some of the characteristics that we want you to strive for when you're building applications is, first of all, to have really great design. Not every website out there is going to make a good Windows Store application. If your web app isn't responsive, then it's probably not going to be great for a phone. If it doesn't have ways to navigate through the screen easily, it's probably not going to be good for an Xbox. So the first thing that you want to do is make sure that you're starting with an application that's going to be suited for those different screen signs. You want to make sure that the design is easy and clear. It does not need to be a single-page application. There's many fantastic multi-page applications out there that will make great hosted web apps. But often single-page applications have some of those components built in, like a back button and loading indicators and things that you would really want inside your application. Remember, as a hosted web app, you don't have the browser Chrome around you that gives the user some indications. The browser will tell you when it's loading a new web page, for example. So you want to make sure that if your web app doesn't provide those indications or directions for a user, that you then tie into some of the WinRT APIs like the back button or use a WebView for loading navigation to be able to enable those indicators for your users. We also want to encourage you to integrate with the platform APIs. If a user can get the same experience from a web browser that they get from your web app in the store, it's probably not going to be a great experience for them. If they can just open it in the browser, they're probably not going to keep going back to your store application. So we encourage you to build experiences and take advantage of those APIs that we provide to you for your Windows apps that you don't have when you're in the browser. And today, or yesterday in the keynote, we talked about a number of the apps in the market that are out there that many of our users are using and have very high ratings that are actually hosted web apps. And this is just a sampling of them, but we're very proud of some of these applications that are in our market today and utilizing web technologies and hosted web apps to build experiences that are delighting users. I'm going to start with a quick demo of one of them. So Shazam is one of those partners that builds with web technologies. Now, one of the drivers for Shazam to build a hosted web app is that they wanted to be able to go and hire any web developer off the street and know that they would be comfortable working with the technologies and the workflows that they use to build their Windows app. They do a lot of their development in the browser before they even move it into an app. So that way they're able to use the browser tools that they're comfortable with, the debugging tools that they're comfortable with in the browser before having to go into the application. Now, one of the features of Shazam, and can you open your Pandora?
For sure.
Quickly and play a song for us, is that it is listening to the music and it's going to pick up the music.
No, you want to, let me try a different song.
There we go. And what it does is it takes that music, it does a sampling of it, and turns it into a pattern, which it then uploads to the server, matches to a database, and brings down the song info that you have. Now, for that, they use a C++ component that is packaged inside the application. And that's kind of where their secret sauce is, right? All the magic of Shazam actually happens in C++, where it's more appropriate to do that type of processing, and at the same time, it encapsulates it into a native component, so they're not just putting all of their IP out there in JavaScript inside of their application. And then they will call that native component from their web code. And I have a little sample that I want to show you of how that works. So I have a Visual Studio project open here that has, a solution that has two different projects. And one of them is C#, and one of them is JavaScript. So what I'm actually going to do is have my JavaScript adding a reference to the C# object. All right, so I add that reference so that it can then call the C#. Inside of my C#, open up, put in here, I have allowed this particular C# class to be called by my web code. So I've added this metadata for allow for web, which then tells the C#, yes, this class can be exposed to my JavaScript. Everything.
So when that project is built and the WinMD is created, all that allow for web means is that JavaScript that's running in the same project can call it.
Yep. And then here, I then, in my JavaScript, will see in the DOM my C# class. So communication WinRT, which is what my project was named, then appears as a DOM API. So inside of window, I'll have window.communicationWinRT. And so I'm setting that to a variable and creating a new instance of it. And then I'm actually adding it to my web view in this case. So the code can either directly call, you can use it in a hosted web app where you directly call that C# code, or in this scenario, you can use it with a web view where I am then pumping that from the JavaScript layer down into my web view.
Right, and the cool thing here is this isn't a bridge where you're passing strings back and forth, so you're not getting those perf overheads. What this is you're directly calling that native component that you built from JavaScript, so the perf overhead doesn't exist. It's just like the native code's executing.
Yep, so in this simple example, I'm actually just gonna call a toast notification from the JavaScript code. So I'll go ahead and run this. And then I'll hit notify, and you'll see my toast notification pop up here. The toast notification was actually called from C#, and my JavaScript code called the API it saw in the DOM. So here's my JavaScript communicating directly with the native code that's inside of my package. Got it? All right. So that's a really great example of how you can integrate the native to build experiences like Shazam does. I'm gonna pull up another partner that we are very proud of the application that they've built for Windows, and that's Pandora. So Pandora needs little explanation. We all use Pandora to play our internet radio stations. And Pandora builds a hosted web app as well, so they can make changes on their server without having to update all of the code in their package. Now, I want to show you an example of integrating with media controls, because we know that there's a lot of media apps out there that are building hosted web apps, who are reusing web code or building new web code for their application. So I actually have this simple page out there that all it does is play a video, okay? And I'm going to convert this into a Windows 10 app. So I'll start here, and to make it go quicker, I'm just gonna do the platform to Windows 10. That's all we have there. Okay. So inside of here, I have the application for Windows 10. And do manifold.js run Windows, which is going to install the application. So the web app will feature detect for the Windows object. And when it sees that Windows object, it'll then attach some of the code it needs to integrate with the controls. So let me show you what that looks like. I'm going to play this video here. And now whenever I change the volume, you'll see I have the pause and play, which then works with the keyboard as well. I have the back and forward if you have multiple tracks, all integrated. And it works both ways. So whenever I hit the play of or the pause of my video, it knows that it's paused here, and then I can start it back up on that level. So you want to integrate with those controls to make it easier for a user. It's quite easy to do. The very first thing that we're going to do is we're going to be testing for Windows, and we're going to say, if we're in Windows, then we're going to call this JavaScript code, because we don't want to run this code in a browser. It's not going to do anything except generate errors. So we'll then go down, and the first thing we do is attach to the Windows Media System Transport Controls, which is going to be the play, pause, and the stop in this case. We want those to call JavaScript functions. So we're going to attach those functions whenever we get a media control. Depending on the button type, we're going to go ahead and call one of these three JavaScript methods. And then we have those JavaScript methods here, which is going to get a reference to our video file and do either a play, pause, or stop on it. The next thing we want to do is not only tie the system controls into the video file, but we want the video file to also announce to the system controls when something has changed. So it's going to work backwards, where if we hit play or pause on our video file, it's going to navigate, it's going to notify the system controls that there's been a change so that it can respond to its UI as well. And this is what a user would expect when they are playing a media application. They expect that if they hit controls on the screen, a pause or a play, that their system controls would be able to respond to that as well. So it's pretty easy to do. Now, I'm going to pass it over to Kirill, who's going to show you quickly the app running on a PC, right?
Yep.
And then he's going to talk about what he has to do to move the Pandora app to other platforms.
Right. So I've already got the Pandora app installed. I'll go ahead and open it up. And Pandora's done a lot of the things that Jeff just went over. They've integrated with the play, pause. So hit play so we don't have to hear that song anymore. And then you'll notice there's no go back, but there's a skip button. I can hit that. It'll change the song. It's a great design. Stop. They've integrated with the system back button. You can resize the app and see it resize. Another thing that Pandora has done, which I think is pretty neat, is they've integrated with Cortana. So if I pause here, let's see if this will work. Pandora, like this song.
All right, thumbing up track.
So it's going to thumb up the track. Cortana is able to pass that off to the hosted web app, and then Pandora has some JavaScript code handling that activation, and they're liking the song for me. So just to go in a little bit of detail for that piece, integrating with Cortana is actually pretty simple from a hosted web app. You can also do it from packaged content this way, so you're not limited. But the first thing you have to do, and this is true for any Cortana activated app, is create a voice command definition file. And what this file does is it describes the commands that your app will be able to handle. It describes them to the platform. And when it's downloaded, it's registered with the platform. And now I can talk to Cortana, your users can talk to Cortana and activate the app. The next thing you need to do is in your HTML page, just stick a meta tag with the name of MS application, Cortana VCD. And then the content points to where you're hosting that VCD file. It's an XML file. You could put it up on your server, or you can keep it local. The nice thing is when it's on your server, you can update it. And the next time your app is launched and running, that file will get pulled down, registered with the platform, and you can light up new commands. So the last thing to do is in JavaScript, you want to feature detect that you're running inside the Windows app host. And if the Windows namespace is there, you are. If it is, you go right ahead, subscribe for that activated event, which I showed earlier. And then you want to check for the type of activation named voice command. If you get a voice command activation, you'll also get the speech recognition result. And you can turn that speech reco into text and play with it as strings. For this sample, I'm just playing two different videos. So one has elephants in it, the other one has steel. I check for those in any of the text, and if it's present, then I go ahead and I play that video. So that's it, three simple steps. This is exactly what Pandora did to enable Cortana for the app, and then light up voice features for their users. But moving away from the traditional platform, there's one type of device that we haven't shown yet in this talk, and that's IoT. Now, IoT runs a trimmed-down version of Windows. It runs Windows IoT Core. And you might be wondering why I have this little boombox here. It's more from Jeff's era, not from mine.
How old do you think I am, Crow?
A lot older than me, I think. But anyways, what I've got here is this same Pandora app running on the Raspberry Pi. This is the older Pi, the Raspberry Pi 2, because I was doing some soldering. And what the Pandora app is able to do when it's running on Windows IoT Core is take advantage of the Pi's input model, and that's the GPIOs. So you've got general purpose input IO. So what we've done, we've 3D printed this case. We had John from our team help us out. It's got some speakers. We've soldered all the stuff in the back. I've taken the back off so I can show you. So here's the Raspberry Pi. Here's all the speaker connections and all the wires to the GPIOs. And we've hooked up these buttons. If you look closely, we don't have a camera, but there's a like, a dislike, there's a play, pause, and a skip button, just like on the Pandora app, except now they're physical buttons. And we've also included a screen, and it's just an LCD screen that you hook up to the Pi. Again, general purpose input output. In order to write to the screen, we're just using JavaScript. We took a WinRT component, it was in C++, we compiled it, included it with the project, marked it with that allow for web meta tag, and then we're able to code against it in JavaScript. In fact, when I was coding up this demo to switch Pandora to using the GPIOs, I was just looking at the DOM, inspecting objects, and seeing what methods I can call off that library. And I saw that there was a method write to screen. I took that and let me show it working. So I hit play. It's playing songs. I can skip the song. There's another song. And while the songs are playing, the cool thing is it's playing the song and the artist, they're being displayed on the LCD screen itself. So I hit pause. I can also like the song. When I like the song, it says song liked on the screen. When I skip the song, it'll go to the next song. I can play it. I can dislike the song. So it's neat. It's that same universal Windows app running on the Raspberry Pi. But because it's a Raspberry Pi, I'm taking advantage of the GPIOs directly from JavaScript. It's like 100 lines of code maybe that I wrote, very simple. And it's a neat little demo that I like to play with.
It's one of the things that gets us really excited about the Windows platform is that this code is our JavaScript code that runs across all of these different platforms, which we can then start to enable the features and the differentiators of each of those platforms all in JavaScript, without needing to go out to do C# or C++, or even work through workflows that we're not comfortable with. This code still lives on a web server, being called down into a Raspberry Pi, calling hardware APIs.
Right, and where Pandora was handling SMTC before, so if I hit play, pause, now we're handling input from the GPIOs. Again,
yeah,
directly through JavaScript, very simple, few lines of code.
Flip us back. All right.
And this is actually the code that I wrote to handle input from the pins. If Jeff goes back one slide.
Slow transitions.
Slow transitions, but I wasn't lying. All you have to do is open up a GPIO controller. That's another Windows API, and it gets exposed on a Windows IoT device. This is all in JavaScript. I'm opening the pin. Pin number 12 is one of the buttons that I'm using. I'm adding the drive mode, so when I click it, I get that input back. And then I'm adding an event listener for on value change there. And then inside my function, I can do things like play pause, skip to next track, dislike a song. That's all I'm doing.
Okay. In summary, we're reaching out to web developers. We want to make sure, first of all, that there is value in the Windows platform for you. So that's one of the reasons why we are investing in the cross-platform tools. We realize that you're writing for multiple platforms. We want Windows to be one of those. So we're going to work hard to make sure that you have the tools that you need, that when you write for platforms, that Windows is one of them. We also want you to dig into the Windows platform and create great experiences there. One of the things that we want you to walk away with today is that this is just JavaScript. It's the same code that you have been writing, the same languages, the same workflows that you use today. You can write your code locally and commit it to a Git repo and push it up to GitHub and have it auto-deployed to whatever service you want. We hope it's Azure, but it can be whatever you want. And all of that, the same way that you work for the web today, works as hosted web apps. Once you're inside of that application, you have a world of APIs that you can access where you can create experiences that just aren't there in the web today. And last but not least, we want to enable you to be able to create high-quality applications. We're very pleased with some of the hosted web apps that have come to the Windows platform this past year. And we want to see the next generation of those applications coming from web developers like yourself. So if we have any questions, we're going to stick around for a few minutes. We have about 10 minutes to answer them. And we do ask that you do an evaluation for this session and let us know how we did. So we're going to leave that on the screen while we answer questions.
Exactly. Thanks, everybody.
And we do have some mics there if you want them.
Right.
Sure.
I got a question.
Yep.
Excuse my voice. My allergies are killing me. How did you guys deal with, so if you have a web API and it's dealing with cores and you have a known URL that you're calling it from, mm-hmm. Okay, now it's everywhere. How do you deal with a cores call coming in from a Raspberry Pi to a web API out on, I mean, it's...
So because the code is being launched from a web URL, it actually is using that domain. So it is, in this case, let's just say it was pandoratest.azurewebsites.net. The same cores rules that we use in the browser are the same things that work inside a hosted web app.
Right. In fact, the slide I showed when we ripped out that same engine powering the web platform inside the browser, it's the same thing that's on the Raspberry Pi. Exact same engine.
Yeah.
The security rules aren't different. Cores, everything is the same.
Tokens, the whole thing works. Yeah.
The whole thing works, exactly. And that's the promise of taking that same engine that powers the browser and putting it behind things like the app host, web view, and all the other web controls. The same edge engine.
Yeah, one more question.
Yeah.
And you didn't add any script tags anywhere for that Windows stuff. That's all related to the app host, you know, the access to window.ui.
Right. That Windows object, that's just in the DOM, present in the DOM when your code is running inside the app host.
Okay. Yeah. And then the same thing for Android and iOS? Or?
So with Android and iOS, what we do is we utilize plugins, Cordova plugins, to do that. So some of those will fall under different namespaces, but in general, they work the same way. One of the differences is you actually add a JavaScript file for iOS and Android, or we can add it for you if you don't want to add it to your server. That kind of enables that namespace. But it's not quite as native on iOS and Android, but definitely works.
I have two questions.
Yeah.
So the first question is, when you put it on these other devices like a Raspberry Pi or even Windows 10, how do you debug it? Or what's the debugging experience like?
So let me switch over back to my laptop. But it won't work with the Pandora app, but because it is a store app. But if I go to that Windows to-do sample and open it, I can hit F12, and that'll bring up the exact same browser debugging tools that come with the browser. You can do it this way. So it's the exact same tools that you get with the browser.
Yep.
Or you can use Visual Studio, which again exposes the JavaScript console, the DOM Explorer, and similar tools that you're used to. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So the second question is, you mentioned about deploying, you know, if, as long as you're using Git and it's on GitHub, you can deploy. What if you're not using GitHub? Like, what if you're using...
Oh, you don't have to use GitHub. So wherever your code's deployed, it doesn't matter. Just like it works in the browser, it'll work in the app host on an IoT device or an Xbox or a PC.
Okay.
So you can deploy your code anywhere, basically. And it doesn't have to be, the back end doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's just, as long as it's web code and it runs in the browser, it'll run in the app host.
Oh, awesome, thank you.
And we also, I forgot to mention, we have some Manifold.js laptop stickers up here afterwards if anybody wants to come by and get some. We have another question here?
Yes. Do you know if the store team's going to do anything to prevent people from creating apps for websites that they're not responsible for?
Yes. So there is a process. I can't give away too much of the secret sauce, but first of all, apps are reviewed when you're submitted to the store. Okay? So there is a review process to see if they're appropriate. And then there is a way for them to tell, and I can't give too many details, but for them to tell if it has changed. So they are not just monitoring up front, but they're also monitoring deployment continuously. Now, the way that the Windows Store works is that we don't handle IP takedowns on our own, unless it's something that is blatantly unsafe or someone trying to deploy a Facebook app that is, you know, tying into a back end that is not Facebook or something like that. But if there's IP, just an IP thing, we actually wait for the it to be contested before we take it down.
So there's nothing stopping a developer from creating like 500 apps for just 500 different websites?
That's right, yeah. Now, like I said, those website owners will likely protest. But.
Right. And then apart from the store on the standards front, with the web app manifest, we're pushing for getting contact info or something else, some way to validate that it is the owner of the website publishing that manifest. So we're trying to add that to the spec, and we'll see if it gets added in the future.
I have a quick question. Are you using Azure to deploy to all the different devices? Like, well, for Windows, on the Windows app and the Windows Store, it's a bit different. But like IoT, I'm not really familiar with it. So like, how did you deploy those devices?
Through on IoT, there's actually a few ways. The first one is through Visual Studio. When you connect the Raspberry Pi to an Ethernet connection or to a Wi-Fi connection, it gets an IP address. So when you're in Visual Studio, let me pop it open and show you. It'll make more sense. You can go deploy to remote machine, and then if you go to project properties, you'll be able to set the IP of that machine. And that's how you also deploy to Xbox, IoT, and you can do it on, phone is, you can connect it. Another way to do it is the Windows device portal. So if you go in the browser and you just type in http://, the IP of that device, and then for an IoT device, it's port 8080. You hit enter, it'll navigate to the device portal, and through there, you can deploy your app on the device.
You can upload your AppX through the web browser right onto the IoT device.
But does that require like a direct connection or at least?
Nope, they just have to be on the same network.
Same network, okay, thanks.
All right, we have time for one more question, then we'll hang up here afterwards.
Can you show us how you managed deploying to multiple platforms to isolate the JavaScript? Or did you compile each individual JavaScript set for deployment? So as I would build an app and I would want to target multiple devices, but I would have specific checks and specific JavaScript code, how would you, what pattern or what strategy would you recommend to manage that?
So what we found is that different developers have different strategies, and we want to support them all. So through Manifold.js, what we'll actually do for every platform is we will allow you to either manage that yourself on the server, where you can include them all and do feature detection or do just a different JavaScript file for each one, or you can put that specific JavaScript in the package itself and then let the app inject it into the web page. So that way you put your JavaScript for iOS into your iOS package, you put your JavaScript for Android in your Android package, and your one for Windows in your Windows package. That is, you know, that's it's really up to you however you feel comfortable managing it. We'll support all the different scenarios. We don't want to make judgment calls. It's all good. All right, well, that's all we have time for today. Like I said, we'll hang up here for a few minutes, and if you want stickers, I'll pop them down here. Just come and grab them.
Great job.
Thank you all.
Thank you.